Welcome to the Fandom Podcast, episode 64. This is the show about the TV, movies, comics, and books that you love. Every week we give you a little bit of geek news and then jump into the fandoms for discussion. Who told you I was Yakuza? I am Brandon Ushio. The co-host without fear is Nick English.
You know you're one bad day away from being me.
And just real quick before we go any further, I need to make sure you understand. You had five fingers when you came in. Now you have two. And this is your fault, Jeff Dumas.
Hey, we're at war. We're at war, man.
Okay, so if you're like, what in the world are these guys talking about? It means that, like me, until recently, you have not seen Daredevil Season 2. These were all things from Daredevil Season 2, and we will be talking about that. We're going to do some non-spoilery talk, and then we're going to jump into some spoilery talk. After that, we'll give you some fair warning. But first, let's jump into some Boy Wonder trivia. Last week, we asked, in Iron Man 3, how many people suit up in a Stark-inspired armor? Now, this is not necessarily armor made by Stark, but it's armor that is very much like the Iron Man armor. So the answer to that is 6. Now, if you're a little confused about that, right off the top of my head, I could only think of 3. And those 3 people were Tony, Pepper, and Rhodey. But Killian wore some armor. The president wore some armor. And then Killian's number 2 used it as a Trojan horse as well. Those were the 6 that suited up into that armor. Hopefully we gave you an excuse to go back and watch Iron Man 3. If not, go fact check us there. So, Nick, do you have a question for us this week?
Yeah, so this one's going to be Star Wars. Let's do Star Wars, because Star Wars is fun. Okay, so which Jedi actor is the real-life nephew of the actor who played Wedge Antilles? So Wedge Antilles is his uncle, the actor who plays it.
And this is in real life. It's not like canon for the story. This is real life. This actor's real uncle was the actor who played Wedge Antilles.
Yep.
Well, you don't know it's not canon.
Yet. Hey, maybe we'll find out because, you know, we're going to learn more about Wedge in Rogue One. So who knows?
All right. So if you know the answer to this week's Boy Wonder trivia, go ahead and leave the answer over on Facebook at facebook.com/fandompodcast. Comment on this post, send us a message, however you want to do that. Or you can head over to fandompodcast.com/contact and fill that form out there and reach out to us. Okay. So let's jump into some feedback real quick. So as long as we're on the topic of Boy Wonder trivia, a few weeks ago we asked in the Star Wars universe, what is the name of the Wookiee homeworld? And, you know, we gave the answer of Kashyyyk, which we talked about being weird for, you know, Wookiees don't really do the hard K sounds and the pretty much any sound in that name. Joseph Dorowski from the Protagonist podcast, he wrote in and said, regarding last week's trivia, the Wookiee home planet was called Kazook in the holiday special before it was called Kashyyyk in every other Star Wars product. But nobody should watch the holiday special, so nobody should know that. So there you go. There's another podcaster who dives deep into the weeds to get all sorts of trivia.
I watched the Star Wars special once, and I choose not to remember a lot about it.
I've only seen a video saying, this is how bad it is, don't watch it. Like, that's the extent of it, so I'm taking his word for it. And has there ever been a good thing about it? Has anyone ever said, man, I love this thing? Is that a thing?
I'm sure when they were like 5 years old.
I personally was like, I need to see it so that I can just see it, you know, and know about it, you know. But
I'm sure George Lucas was like, this is awesome. It just made me a lot of money.
Yeah. Made a lot of people mad and made a lot of money. The only way I like to make money. Make my fans
mad. This is angry money right here. Okay. So, you know, and, you know, Kazook would actually make more sense. I was thinking about it. Kazook would make more sense for a Wookiee because,
I don't know. Kazook.
Because the Kazook. Double O sound.
I don't know.
Yeah.
I'm trying to say it Wookiee style.
I don't know. But the double O sound, making that ooh would probably be more in the Wookiee. I don't even know. I'm not a linguistics guy.
Dialect? So,
yeah, maybe dialect. There's probably some linguist out there being like, no, you fools, it's this. So if you know, write in. Let me know.
If you're that linguist.
Okay, so now that we've done some feedback and some Boy Wonder trivia, let's jump into the geek news. So number one on our geek news, let's start out kind of on the sadder note and then jump into some more exciting, happy stuff. So number one on our geek news is Agent Carter has officially been canceled. What do you guys think about that?
I've already signed all the petitions saying Netflix pick it up and have it be renewed. I know it won't do any good, but...
You're one of those people who doesn't understand why it was canceled. Haley Atwell got another job. She can't do it. You can't have Agent Carter without Agent Carter.
She said that if they wanted to do it, she would work it out.
Well, she said that, but she's not in charge of the production schedule for the other stuff. So, you know, and that's the thing is ABC probably had a timetable of we have to get it done at this time for this reason. Where Netflix, while I completely agree with Jeff, you know, she got this job, she's not going to be able to do it. Netflix might be able to be a little bit more flexible with her and be like, okay, we are working on this. We'll shoot around your schedule. So give us a time frame, essentially. Yeah. But I doubt that. I really doubt that.
Yeah.
Me too, but still, you know, you can hold out hope. It's the same thing with, you know, hold out hope for Firefly that'll never happen.
I've given up on Firefly.
But like, it's just that. Same hope.
The article I read, it was partially she got a new job and partially the ratings weren't all that great. It was declining. It's everyone wanted it to be Captain America, but it wasn't.
Well, what I wanted it to be was like the founding of S.H.I.E.L.D. You know, that short where she answered the phone and went and saved the day. I wanted to see her and Howard Stark building S.H.I.E.L.D.
Yeah, that's another thing it should have been, but, you know, for some reason we had, I was about to say something that was going to get me in a lot of trouble. I'm going to take that back. it just didn't turn out the way anyone wanted. And so it's sad, but it had to happen.
It almost felt like they were doing a Dollhouse, you know, treatment to it, where like Dollhouse, they stretched everything out. And then the heart of it, they were trying to get to a lot later so that people, you know, like they could build on it or make more whatever, and they should have just kind of got to the heart of it immediately and not dragged it out so much. So I can see that. I mean, they did the same thing with Dollhouse and that failed after two seasons.
I agree with that. Makes a lot of sense if they were trying to build up to the buildup of S.H.I.E.L.D.
What if they literally like the pilot was the short film and then they built it from there? Do you think it would have lasted if it would have started with Howard Stark saying, I want her helping me found S.H.I.E.L.D.?
I think there was enough that she could have done that. I think that they could have been like, oh, here's this wacky story for how do we handle this? I don't know. We've never done this before. Let's figure it out. You know, those kinds of things. And they could have tied in enough Easter eggs to like the movies. They could have included in the movies like, well, why do we do it this way? Well, because Peggy Carter said we do it this way, you know, and then have an episode about why we do it that way. I think there was enough. Heck, you've got an Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. right now. So if you can have Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., you can have the creation of S.H.I.E.L.D., the origin story of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Absolutely.
I think that would have been okay.
Oh, what could have been?
Yeah, hindsight's 20/20.
So. Yeah. Yeah. Okay, so Agent Carter has officially been canceled. It's sad, but it was, I don't know, you could probably see the writing on the wall the second that she had that other job.
I think the worst part is that they ended second season on a cliffhanger. Like, the first season ended all right. I don't really remember a cliffhanger. And then season two has a definite one, and now it's canceled. So I think that's most frustrating of all.
Yeah. I hate how seasons end on cliffhangers. If I like the season, wrap it up, and I will come back. If I didn't like it enough to come back without a cliffhanger, I didn't like it enough to finish watching it, you know? Oh, anyway, that's a pet peeve of mine about all shows. So our next story is about a show that survived the cancellation, and I'm really glad because I really like this show. Supergirl has been renewed, and here's the thing, though. It's not just renewed. It is moving to the CW, and this will be interesting because I read that they only have 10 hours of content, of original content that they do on their channel, and they renewed all of their shows that they have during primetime slots. So does this mean that they are going to shrink instead of giving Flash and Arrow 22, 23 episode seasons, that they're going to shrink down to like the 13 episode, like Netflix and AMC style seasons and second show?
I might actually like that better for Arrow and Flash, because then they get to the point.
I'm pretty sure
I don't think they will.
Pretty sure Legends isn't coming back next for another season. That's just me saying it. I haven't heard anything or read anything, but
no, I was pretty sure they renewed Legends of Tomorrow.
Really? I'm not saying like I love the show. It's a great
season
show.
Three.
But what are you going to do for the second season if they? I mean, the season's not over yet. They haven't stopped Vandal Savage yet. So they either means he's going to get away again, or they're going to stop him, and then something else is going to pop up. I mean, what can you do?
Okay, think about this. Say they stop him, and then they go back to their timeline, and everything's different.
Okay.
Then they're like, okay, what changed? We have to go fix this. And then they go fix things.
Yeah, maybe. But once you fix too many, then you get into the paradoxy thoughts of if we fix too much, that just puts Vandal Savage back at power and everything. But yeah I don't know.
There was an episode of Star Trek Voyager about this, about a starship that could change the past to change the timeline. And this captain, essentially what happened was he changed the past and it wiped out his entire family. And so now his whole mission is to change it enough back so that he gets his family back. Like, and even if it's a 99% the way back, he's still missing 1%, and that's unacceptable to him. So
I remember that. Okay. Yeah, that was a good one. I remember that.
Yeah, time travel is a sticky mess. So Legends of Tomorrow is coming back. So they're gonna have to do something to fit Supergirl in. What did you have something to say about that, Nick?
Well, I was just thinking that the thing that I am more worried about is that CBS probably had a lot bigger budget for Supergirl, and that show is very CGI heavy. Like, it has a lot of aliens and flying and stuff like that, and you can kind of tell, like, even with Flash and Arrow, when they're like saving on the budget. Yeah, they're stretching the budget because they're like, oh, we're just not gonna have Flash run this time. He's just gonna, you know, lose his powers for 4 episodes, you know, like, so that he's not running, you know, but whatever. Yeah, I mean, like, there's always times that it's like, well, yes, I could fly, but I decided to run today, you know, or whatever. But so I wonder if that's going to bring the show down. I mean, they're going to have to get creative with it, but I sure hope they don't get too
conservative. So here's one big thing that will save them money on their budget is the show is moving from L.A. to up in Canada where they shoot, and that's a lot cheaper. I hope they're able to get everybody to move up to Canada. I mean, obviously, yeah, Melissa Benoit is going to do it, but I mean, that's a lot of the production costs right there is to be in LA. So we'll see how that goes. I like the show a lot, and I kind of hope my favorite episode of the show was the Flash crossover. That was just so perfect. And I hope that they are able to keep Calista Flockhart, because her cat Grant is amazing. And Melissa Benoit and the guy who plays Jimmy Olsen. So I was really like frustrated at first. I'm like, no, Jimmy Olsen's supposed to be a nerd, but I like this guy. I like his take on Jimmy Olsen.
Nerds come in all shapes and sizes, Brandon.
Oh, not that shape and size. Let's just say that.
Jeez. Oh man.
So I've still only seen the pilot of this show. So I hope that somehow in the moving to CW, I get to catch up on season 1. I wanted to watch it, but CBS, they just made it so hard to find. I couldn't watch it on Hulu. I didn't want to have to set up on my computer. I wanted to watch it on my TV, but you know, it was one of those things that got away from me, and I still haven't seen any of it.
And I stopped watching it after the mid-season break because I forgot. I just forgot to watch it. It's like,
CBS is terrible to stream things with, and who watches anything live anymore? And yeah,
I don't have a DVR either, so
you barely have cable.
As soon as Microsoft rolls out their DVR feature, which I hear they have in beta for like the past year, I will have a DVR, an over-the-air DVR, because I've got a TV tuner for my Xbox One. But yeah, you're right. I don't have a DVR right now. And that is something that I would really like to have. Oh, okay. So yeah, that's Supergirl moving to CW. The CW executives actually said that they were really bummed that they had to pass on Supergirl when it was initially pitched to them, because it was actually pitched to them before they had even started the first season of The Flash. And they're like, look, we've got way too much going on our plate right now. Anyway, we're going to have to pass on this one. And so CBS took it, and the CBS numbers are it's in the lower half of the CBS numbers. But if they move those numbers to the CW, then I think the CW will be very happy with the way that Supergirl has turned out.
For sure.
Okay. And then the last news story that we're going to do today is that the Hollywood Reporter has reported that Michael B. Jordan is going to, it has joined the cast of Marvel's Black Panther. I was not necessarily like super excited about the Black Panther movie until I saw Civil War, and then I saw Civil War and I was like, yes, more of this please, because just like the acting between Chadwick Boseman and the guy who plays his father, I was just like, holy cow, like in 10 minutes they did more of an origin story, and I knew more about their relationship than a lot of movies do in 2 hours.
Yeah, it was brilliantly written, and dude, the guy is awesome. Like, all of his, like, he's just spot on Black Panther. Like, oh my gosh.
So that just means another Human Torch has joined the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
they're going to be able to have their own Secret Wars with just Human Torch versions here coming up.
Well, and I just hope that, you know, Captain America.
I want them to meet
and look at each other and be like, wow, you're on fire, man, or something like that. They just need to say something, some corny pun or something, just to say.
What's your name, Johnny? No, I'm Steve. Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah, anything. Kind of like they did in Deadpool. This is my most cherished possession. Anyway, hilarious.
Yes, I still haven't seen Deadpool.
Yeah, Deadpool.
I've seen Civil War 3 times.
It'll be interesting to see him in there. It won't be his first superhero movie, which I hope they have some, at least some reference to it. Come on, Marvel, you know you want to do it.
I'm kind of interested to see what he's going to do. You know, I mean, there's not a lot of other characters that they could introduce somebody that I don't know. I don't read a lot of Black Panther, and most of my knowledge comes from the animated cartoons. So,
yeah,
I don't know if I'll know something. I actually just thought of something. I think I have Black Panther #1 comic.
Like volume 1, #1?
Yeah, I think that might be one of the ones that my dad bought, because he bought a lot of #1s and a lot of them are ridiculous. I'm going to have to look into that.
That's going to be worth a lot of money here. Well, yeah. It probably is right now. But
probably
like,
going to be worth a lot more now that it's actually kind of in the limelight. I remember looking at it. Yeah, I do. I remember looking at it and being like, oh, this guy's cool. And I think I actually tried to draw it one time because I thought that it was kind of a cool pose.
Okay, we're going to have one of these days where we sit down and organize your comic collection.
For sure.
And we take the valuable ones and protect them.
I know. There's a lot. I've got a few now. Yeah, that's interesting. Maybe I shouldn't say this on the air, because then people will come and raid my house.
Well, I know where your house is, and I know how to break in. So.
You do.
It's not breaking in. It's not breaking in if you have a key.
That's true. Dang it. I'm changing the locks. No.
I don't have a key.
Yet. All right. Yeah. Anyway.
Okay.
I'm excited for Michael B. Jordan. I liked him enough in what I've seen him. He was in Chronicle, Fruitvale Station, and Creed, obviously. He's a fine actor. He knows what he's doing. So I trust Marvel.
Yeah, no, that makes me think about something that George Takei said in his video where he was talking about Yellowface. He said back in the day, they only believed that there was one black man who could act, and that was Sidney Poitier. And all it took was more opportunities for more ethnic people to have roles, and they learned otherwise. And I mean, I think this is another fine example of finally a movie that is not just about white people.
Yeah, right now the only white person cast in this movie is Andy Serkis.
And he's the villain.
And there's going to be mocap, hopefully.
Well, he's playing Ulysses Claw.
Claw.
Oh, that's right. That's
right.
They
already had him in
from Age of Ultron.
Age of Ultron. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, that doesn't mean he won't do motion capture. He did motion capture in Ultron, too. So who knows? When you hire Andy Serkis, you look for a reason to do motion capture. You're like, can we put him in a panther? Can we make him one of the panthers? Can we do something? Yeah.
Hey, you know how to put this suit on. Go ahead and suit up. We'll just put you on that green screen.
We'll make
screen
you a
there.
Giant gorilla. You can fight a panther.
I'd be down for that.
Just reminds me of Black Panther's introduction in the Avengers cartoon a while ago. It involved a gorilla or man-ape or something like that.
Yeah, man-ape. He was trying to take over.
Man-ape's what? Were they making a sandwich?
Yes, man-witch.
Man-ape.
It's man-ape's made of real man.
Man-witch.
That way you know it's good.
More on Nick's...
Secrets in the sauce.
Oh, I need to watch that movie. Now I know where the quote's from, though. So, fried green tomatoes.
Yeah.
Not to be confused with Attack of the Killer Tomatoes.
Yeah. I do have to say something that got cut out last week. Now you guys know how awesome my wife is because you got to listen to her for a little while. So,
nothing got cut out from last week. What are you talking about? That's how the conversation happened.
It's not like we recorded for 2 hours and then had some technical difficulties and Okay, so now that we've gone over our geek news, we've had Agent Carter canceled, Supergirl moved to the CW, and Michael B. Jordan joining the cast of the Black Panther, why don't we jump over into our geek discussion, which we are going to be talking about Daredevil Season 2. So if you have not seen this yet, we are going to say just a little bit about it without spoiling things, and then we're going to warn you, we'll give you full-on warning, and then go into our full spoilery mode. Okay, guys, before we kick out everybody who hasn't watched it yet, do you have any non-spoilery thoughts about this season?
Why haven't you watched it yet?
I've been busy. Oh, you're talking to the audience.
Oh, well, whoever answers, if the boot fits, you know.
Well, and I understand it's a big time commitment. I mean, it is 13 episodes that are all just under an hour. Maybe some of them are a little longer. I don't know. I think they're all about 40, 45 like minutes. Yeah. But yeah, the thing that and this is not spoilery, okay? But the thing I love about this season is that it's almost like three separate stories. And so you can watch the first third and then the second and then the end if you want to separate it out. I don't know if you guys agree with me on that, but like it just
seems
like
there were these three. I'm going to say no to that.
You're going to say no?
Yes. I mean, I'll disagree with you on that one because yes, there are three stories in it, but they are so interwoven that you're going to want to see one so that you can understand the other. And
But I liked that. Like, I liked that it was like, okay, there's this one little story here, and then, yeah, that we've come to a conclusion, but it's opened up the next part. Yeah, so it's almost like a mid-season finale for me, like three, you know, twice.
Like yeah, I did like that. I liked how it ended the story and moved on to the next one, but then it brought in elements from the previous story into the next part.
Yeah, but wouldn't you do that the same thing with like season two and season one of something?
Yeah, no, that's exactly right. And I would not recommend to anybody to watch season two without watching season one first.
Yeah, and it is kind of funny because Lena half watched it with me and I had to explain stuff to her a lot. And she's like, I should just watch the show. And I'm like, yeah, you should just watch the show.
We've been telling you that for a year. You should be watching the show.
And we tried to get her to watch it a few times and she's watched the first two episodes, but yeah.
Well, I will say this. This is non-spoilery. There were a couple times that I've had hard times with this show and issues with this show because of the gratuitous nature of the violence. As far as I can remember, there is no nudity. There is really no. There's one scene with a little bit of naughtiness, but it's better than most of the things that you get.
Well,
during
it depends
prime
on what
TV.
You consider nudity, because there is side boob.
Oh, in the first season.
And the second season.
Oh, well, this will explain a little bit about how I watched it. So Netflix added a feature, and the first show that they did this with, and I understand they're doing it to more and more shows now, but in Daredevil Season 1, they added a feature called Descriptive Audio. So when you choose your subtitles, that is one of the options. And so we're talking about this tonight, and I've been busy this week, and so I actually didn't get to finish watching the entire show, the entire season of this. But I'm like, no, I want to get as much of it as I can, and I drive quite a bit. You know, family lives 45 minutes away, works 45 minutes away, so I drive quite a bit. So I turned on this descriptive audio on my and played the show on my phone while listening in my Bluetooth headset while driving. Hmm. So
that
I used
sounds
the blind
all sorts
mode.
Of dangerous. I'm
no,
sorry.
I didn't watch the show. I didn't watch the show.
I know. It still sounds kind of dangerous.
It's no different than an audiobook at that point.
I guess you're right.
Because you have a narrator. You have a narrator explaining what's going on, and then you have their audio and the sound effects. And it was really cool. And I don't know if they made things more enhanced on that descriptive audio, or if I just noticed it more. But like when they said like, you know, and he took off his tie, you could hear cloth being pulled through like you were taking off a tie. And, you know, the sound mixing was awesome on this. And during the fight scenes, I felt like I was right there because the way that the narrator was describing it and the sounds that were there, I could see the entire thing in my mind's eye. And I thought it was awesome.
I'm going to have to look into that. That sounds really cool.
Yeah, so I did it with a few episodes of Daredevil Season 2. I'm probably going to try it some more because it's a really interesting way to watch this TV show because it's not watching it and it was pretty interesting. I'm definitely going to experiment some more with it, but it's a lot of fun. But that might be also why I missed some of the partial nudity. Definitely not one to have with your kids. Not one to watch with your kids.
It always surprises me when there's like little kids that are like cosplaying as Daredevil and stuff. I'm like, did you watch that show? You probably shouldn't have. You know,
well,
like,
look at it from a parent's perspective. Of a kid wants to dress up, you go, here, you can be Daredevil, because all you need is black clothing and something to put on their head if you want to do season one. But, you know, there's a lot of people cosplay as that. But I do agree, it's not for kids. Absolutely not.
Yeah. I think this is a great martial arts show. Well, I don't know about martial arts. Fight scene show. There are a lot of awesome fight scenes in this. And the way they're choreographed is a lot of fun to watch. And then, like I said, the sound editing was great in these.
I do have to talk about that. I was thinking about the sound and the music in this show. And I was thinking it really does set the tone really, really well. Whoever is the composer and like in charge of that, like, that was one of the things that really stood out to me as I was watching it the second time. You know, like the first time you watch it for fun, and the second time you say, okay, well, I'm actually going to be reviewing this on a podcast, so I've got to think about things a little bit differently, you know. And that was one of the things that just like just hit me in the head. I was like, oh my gosh, the music in the show is just brilliant. Like, it's really, really good, and it sets the tone so well for it. Even the opening credits, you know, like, it's just a great job. So whoever it was, good job.
Yeah, the sound design in this is awesome. The fight scenes I really enjoy watching. Yeah, and the fight scenes I really dislike watching. That's a weird mix that I've got right there. Like, some of it's just a little too much for my queasy stomach, but some of it, other parts, it's like, that is awesome. Give me much more. So,
and sometimes I'm a little sad about how dark they are, but that's Daredevil, so I can't complain too much. But I think that some of them are so dark, and it might be that I'm watching it, you know, in a light room, not in a dark room. Like, maybe I should do that instead or something like that. But when I was watching some of the scenes, I said, it gets really lost, some of the stuff. And that is also, you know, kind of makes it more impressive, because then you can fill in the gaps of what this person is doing in your mind instead of actually just seeing it. But me being a martial artist, I want to see it. You know, like, I want to see every single little part of it. And so, you know, that could just be either way. Like, people could feel either way. I know that my dad, every single time that there's a fight scene that's like zoomed in, he's like, oh, dad, I want to see it. You know, like, he was really mad about that. And like Bond and, you know, Bourne, like all of those, like, he's just like, no, zoom out. I want to see what's going on in the car chase or in the stuff. So he does not like that. But I think it has its place. But yeah, that was the only thing I was kind of like bummed about as far as the fight scenes went.
What I love, okay, there's a fight scene early on, the one with, he has a chain, that's all I'm going to say, where it looks like, it probably wasn't, but it gives the feel of a continuous shot all the way through this hallway. And I love, those are my favorite kinds. There was one in the second episode of the series that it's my absolute favorite fight scene, all one continuous shot, and he's just beating up a whole bunch of people, and you can see how tired he is. It's, what I like is about the fight scenes also is he gets tired. He gets like, oh, come on, not another one. Okay, unlike Captain America, towards the end maybe, but unlike him, he just, okay, we're fighting, we're done, okay, next guy. Daredevil gets exhausted. He gets injured, you know?
Yeah, that's human. One thing that I like about this show is that Daredevil is physically not that different than a normal guy. He's got the cuts and bruises and scrapes, and he, you know, it's not like Captain America with the super soldier serum. You're exactly right there. But I'm looking this up. So I looked up that fight, the hallway fight scene, and it looks like it was one continuous shot.
Even better.
They had to do the shot 12 times.
Yeah,
I think three of them, we made it all the way through to the end, and one of them was the one in the show, which is kind of almost flawless. So that's what Charlie Cox, who plays Daredevil, said. That hallway scene was, they shot it 12 times, because, so this is what he said, because it's not like a long tracking shot with two people speaking, it's a long tracking shot with people punching. If one punch doesn't land, it no longer works. It ceases to work as a scene. So yeah, if you messed up on one punch, You had to start all the way over.
How would it feel to be the guy that screwed up the punch on like take 11? Come on, Frank. You know, geez.
Well, it would make me wonder if they actually number 7 was the one they succeeded on, and they were like, let's try again and see if it works. You know, and then after 12, they're like, okay, well, let's just use this one.
We got it.
Everyone's exhausted.
One of these will work. Let's,
go home. But yeah, Charlie Cox actually was the lead in Stardust that I talked about last week. So that's another reason
to go
see Stardust.
Very different kind of character.
If you like Charlie Cox, go watch Stardust.
Okay.
Just like, who cares, Nick? Let's talk about Daredevil.
We're talking about fighting and punching and not falling people from the sky who were... Yeah.
Leave your weird show behind, okay? We're talking about a blind guy who's a master at martial arts, okay?
With superpowers.
Yeah.
And hearing and senses. And,
heightened senses.
Yeah. Yes. You got no room for your fantasy.
Fantasy? Oh, man.
Okay. Okay, so did you guys have anything else non-spoilery that you can think of right now?
I think that everyone that was in this show was perfectly cast. Like, that's the one thing that I love about Daredevil. You know, reading the comics, knowing these characters, you know, every single time they cast somebody, they are just spot on. And I just picture them as them, and the actors do a great job. So I'll just say that. And that's probably good. Let's start spoiling the crap out of this.
Yeah, I agree. Okay. Everything. There's not a missed cast in the whole thing. Perfect.
Well, that's kind of Marvel's MO right there.
Well, the new Marvel.
All right. Let's fire off the spoiler alert. If you are still listening to this, then prepare to be more spoiled than a child going to their grandparents' house on Christmas.
Right. It's your fault from here on out. Okay. Had five, now two. Your fault. Anyway. I got such a crack. Sorry. So when Daredevil dies, I'm...
So, Nick, you said you wanted to do a synopsis?
Sure. Let's just talk about kind of what happens in the series. I mean, we stop season one with Fisk going to jail, and Daredevil thinks that he has cleaned up the city and he's very happy and proud of himself. But as we all know in Hell's Kitchen, it does not really work that way, right? And we were left with knowing that there was this mysterious organization called The Hand that kind of had their, hand in stuff. Quote unquote. So it's really interesting kind of how this one starts out, because you think that it's just going to be The Hand and that's what it's going to be about. But they don't actually talk about The Hand that much, or really that much, until a lot later on in the series, after 4 or 5 episodes, because the first, 4 episodes are really talking about Frank Castle, and his story and kind of what's going on with him, Frank Castle is an ex-Marine that kind of flips out and decides that he wants to take the law into his own hands. And as time moves on, more and more is revealed that the reason he is doing this is because his family was killed before his eyes. And it was actually in a quote-unquote gang war that happened right in front of him. And so he is picking off the different gangs that were involved in this gang war, and his family was caught in the crossfire. And I have to say, I did not know that Vincent Van Gogh was such a bad A dude.
I had that exact same thought. I was like, oh, one of the only other things I've seen this actor in is the Doctor Who episode where he plays Vincent Van Gogh.
Yeah, and it was, and it's such a different part, and he is just so good as the lead of the Irish mob, and just this hardcore, just
you killed my son, but I want my money.
Yeah, where's my money? It's like yes, and yeah, like that was really cool. Like that kind of kind of made it for me. But so the story kind of goes that Frank Castle kills a whole bunch of people, and then the press kind of label him as the Punisher, and he's the anti-hero. So he's either a hero because the only people that he's killing are people who are really bad people, but then there's also, the district attorney that says, no, we can't just have people taking the law into their own hands. And so there's this struggle going on, with even Daredevil thinking, well, you know, the law needs to take care of him, but also, you know, he can't just go around and kill people. And so, you know, that's really the crutch of the Punisher, and that's what makes him such an intriguing character, and that's why a lot of people really love him. And I think they did a great job of establishing that he is a terrible person, but he's doing it for good reasons. You know, like, I mean, he's doing it out of vengeance, which is a very bad reason to do something, but he's also doing it because he wants to avenge his family. And also he understands that there's really bad people doing them, and he believes the only way to stop them is by just taking them out of the equation. And one of the best scenes in the first, you know, part of this show is when him and Daredevil kind of duke it out for the first time, and they have a discussion about it. You know, they're sitting there talking, and he's like, no, no, you know, you can't take the law in your own hands. And he's like, you're a coward. He's like, you do everything half at, you're a half measure. Like, that's his words. He's like, you're a half measure. You think you're a man who, you know, I think you're a man who can't finish the job, you know, and you're a coward. And, you know, Daredevil has to struggle with that, you know, internal, you know.
See, I think this is one of the best Punishers that has been written in media because of that, because usually Punisher gets written as like this guy who just wants to kill everybody. They don't get the nuances that he is the exact same as Daredevil, just, you know, what does he say? It's just one bad day away from being the Punisher. Yeah. And I think that it's great that they've got these nuances in there where the Punisher, you're like, no, this is a good guy doing good things. But then you're like, but he's just killing people. Like, you get torn on it. And so I really think they did a good job. I think the scene where he goes in to buy the police scanner is a great example of that, where he goes in and he, you know, buys the police scanner, and the guy's like, hey, I've got some girls too, if you're interested in some girls.
Yeah.
And guaranteed 12. Guaranteed, yeah, at least 12. 12 years old.
And it just freezes him in his tracks.
Yeah. Do you like him young? You know? Oh, man.
So,
like,
which goes to show, if a guy walks into your pawn shop, wants to buy an illegal police scanner, and then your gun, don't offer him child pornography. just quit while you're ahead. He paid cash. Just quit while you're ahead.
Yeah. No, I think it's really interesting to see how well they did this, how well they made him likable and yet hateable at the same time.
Well, they finally had time. The last two Punisher movies, they spent half the movie establishing his origin, and it didn't turn out that well. And so the second one, they ditched that origin and just shoehorn one in, and it turned out even worse. So now they actually had time. It's a character you really need to see over time explained, because he's more complex than, oh yeah, his family was killed. Yeah, the gang, something like that. Now he's going to kill a bunch of people.
And I think that fleshing out really happened in the, you know, leading up to him, like, talking to Karen and saying, you know, this is who I am, and her, and, you know, only trusting him, like, or her, I guess. Yeah. You know, the Punisher only trusts Karen to talk to, and she kind of built up this rapport with him. And then, you know, Matt's kind of freaking out, and we can get to that. But, like, we're talking about the Punisher right now. But, like, that scene where he is in court, you know, and they're like, and he's basically, they're trying to convince him, no, you need to plead insanity. And he's like, but I'm not crazy. Now, every crazy person thinks that. And so it's this, you know, like, you know, hard position to be in, because they're like, we want to win this case. And Foggy's like, I love how Foggy is just shows his colors. Like, he's just brilliant. Like, he is an awesome lawyer, and he's been kind of piggybacking off of Matt, but now this is his time to shine, you know. Yeah,
I definitely want to talk about that in just a second, for sure, because that was a big part of this season.
And it was really, really well done too. But yeah, that scene with the Punisher, and when he, you know, that very end part when the cop says, you know, what do you really want? And you're just like, wait, what's going on? Like, no, like, we had this figured out. And like, that, I think that was like the end of the first, you know, like, season for me. I was like, that is a great ending. Now what's going to happen in the next, you know, episode? But yeah, the Punisher was just done so well, you know, and then he kind of goes MIA for a little while. Then they bring him back, and it's just so good. So I don't know if we want to continue, or if we want to go back and kind of talk about what else happened at the first of the season.
Well, so I think it's important to say that. So like Jeff said, there was a lot more time devoted to the Punisher in the season than in the previous media. But I'm I'm looking at this. The first two seasons, or the first two episodes, you really don't get to know the Punisher very well at all. You get to see him. You get to see the aftermath of his big, you know, mob busting,
killing attack. The entire Irish mob by himself.
Yeah, you know, himself. And so you get to see. Oh my gosh, this guy's got some skills at this. And then you get to see him being like, no, you do not offer anyone a 12-year-old. I am taking you out. And so you get to see that he's kind of good about it. But I mean, so they gave him more time to flesh out the Punisher. But I think that really just those two things right there told you who the Punisher was, what kind of actor character he is, where he is both ruthless and a heart of gold, if that makes sense. Like, he's a Boy Scout and a vigilante at the same time, which doesn't normally go hand in hand and produce the same results as the Punisher, but it did. I felt like the season started out kind of slow. I felt the first two episodes were really slow, and it really didn't start picking up till episode 3 when Daredevil wakes up and he's the Punisher's captive.
Yeah.
So
chained to the chimney. Isn't that almost shot for shot from the comic?
Shot from what?
From the comic books. I didn't ever read that comic, so I can't say.
I've heard stuff saying that having a gun taped to Daredevil's hand while chained to a building was the, like, and Punisher saying, shoot me or I'm going to kill all these people. It's the only way you can stop me. I've heard that is almost directly from the comic.
Well, that makes me happy.
So
yeah, that's definitely impressive right there.
Well, that's like where you get to know the Punisher, like, in, you know, and I just love that scene. Like, that's such a good scene, you know, and that's where he gets his nickname. He starts calling him Red, and you know, it's just like, okay.
You a psychiatrist, Red? What's going on?
What are you doing? Yeah. But yeah, like, and then, you know, you kind of have the whole love story between Matt and Karen, you know, and inevitably that needed to happen. I mean, it's definitely documented in the comics, you know, and so, you know, that added interest and built up the characters between them and their rapport, you know, and Foggy's a little bit jealous, you know, because he's always had a thing for Karen, you know. And
then, but he's got hot blonde lawyer.
Yeah, like, but they already established that, you know, he knew that wasn't good. And so that's why it ended. You know, he was like, yeah, you know, I still talk to you, but, you know, we just don't work together, you know.
They will be now.
Yes, that's true. They will be working together, but not work together. Yeah, and I thought that was really well done too, because there was like, was it like the fourth episode or the where it was like, yeah, let's go on a date, and then they go on a date and they're all like happy, and then he, you know, at the end of that is when he goes and talks to
Elektra.
Yeah,
Elektra actually broke into his apartment. He's there. He opens the fridge. He opens a beer. He's sitting there. He's so happy, and all of a sudden he grabs a knife and goes, Elektra, and you see her sitting on the couch, and it cuts the credits, and it's just like, come on, he's finally. Cut him a break.
Yeah, he's like happy, and now his ex-girlfriend has shown up and she's stirring the pot.
So I have to say that I as I was watching that, I knew that something was going to happen, because my, so first off, they forecasted it. They said they told him, or was it Foggy that was like, well, this isn't going to be good. You're going to be happy, and for a Catholic person, that's just not right. That's
funny. Yeah.
And so as soon as he said that, I'm like, oh, great. Now I know that he's not going to be able to be happy.
Well, they talk about it too in their conversation, where he says, I'm not going to come upstairs because I want this to be the perfect day. And if I come upstairs, then I have a tendency to ruin stuff, you know, and I want to be happy. And so I'm going to go home and, you know, let this day be perfect. Well, it didn't turn out to be perfect, but yeah. So
no, I felt so bad for him, even though I saw it coming a mile away. I was like, this guy, he's Daredevil. He can't be happy. He's always going to have something. He's a superhero. With great power comes great responsibility.
No, that's the other guy.
Oh, that's the other guy in red. My bad.
Deadpool, that, I think it is.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I think that's, well, let's go with that.
El hombre araña.
So just ignore Nick when he starts speaking Spanish. That's what I do.
El chico maravilla.
So
that's how you say boy wonder in Spanish.
Oh, okay. Good to know. Scratch that one off.
So I think that I liked the way that the whole Nelson and Murdoch thing turned out, and how their dynamic between the three of them, I felt, was so much better in this first part of the season than it was in season one. I just really liked the dynamic. I liked the fact that Foggy was able to shine. You know, he had a couple instances that come to my head. It's like, so I mean, the obvious one is when he's in and he's giving the opening statements in Frank's case. But I also think, you know, the scene where he was in the hospital and he talks down the guys from having the fight.
Yeah.
That just was like, that's awesome, Foggy. But then not just that, right at the very beginning of the season, pretty much, he stumbles into a biker bar and he's able to talk his way out of getting himself killed.
They weren't messing with him.
So, yeah, I thought that was really interesting. And I thought it was an interesting way for them to show these people. And then they incorporated them later when the Punisher was going on a rampage. Yeah, I thought it was good. I liked Foggy showing up. I did not like Karen and Matt hooking up. I thought that was a little too forced, but at the same time, I felt bad for Foggy during it.
Yeah, so. I thought Foggy and Karen were on lock. Yeah. Wow, did I just say that? Okay. I really thought they were going to be from last season. Yeah, I thought they were going to be.
Yeah. Another thing about their law office that I really thought was interesting was how they went from being the guys who took down Wilson Fisk, because they prosecuted Fisk, and then after that, everybody in Hell's Kitchen wanted to come to them. They were just riding high on cloud nine. And when I say everyone in Hell's Kitchen, I mean everybody who didn't have money in Hell's Kitchen came to them for help.
Well, I love that scene where he's like, this is the last piece of so-and-so's pie, and I'm giving it to you.
Which means it's the only food left.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I liked how they were getting paid in pies, but they felt like they were just rolling in the dough because they were being successful. And I liked how they were showing that being successful didn't necessarily mean making lots of money. And then compared to this season where everything looked like they were going to just completely not get Frank Castle off for what he did, but at least reduce the sentence. And then when that didn't work, how they were just like, well, this is it. No one's going to work hire us. We just ran ourselves into the ground. And so how quickly that shifted from Fisk fame to Punisher pain.
Put that up.
Yeah, look at that.
Well, and Foggy, like that's what made his character so fun with this is because, and I think that it was also like the perfect way to establish him as his own man. And we kind of touched on this a little bit before, but like the fact that he was kind of riding on Matt because he knew that Matt had these, you know, gifts and even, you know, he has a conversation with Karen about it. He's like, look, Matt is better at some stuff and I'm better at other stuff. And so Matt needs to do this. And so, and she's like, no, Foggy, you were awesome. You should just do it. And he's like, no. And, you know, he talks her down. And then when Matt fails to, appear because he's all mixed up with, Elektra and, having that whole problem, Foggy steps up and I like how it's not just like all of a sudden he's like he just takes over and he's doing brilliantly. Like he has to warm up. Like he's failing at the beginning. Like he's talking to him and he's failing and he's not doing anything well. And then all of a sudden he kind of has this moment where he has a little bit success and that's all he needed. And then he's asking all the right questions and he's talking to the colonel and the colonel's like, no, this is what happened. And, Frank Castle was a hero and blah, blah, blah. And, and he's like, no more questions, Your Honor. And then the DA walks up and she's like, well, I've been told that a lot of the times, on a report, it looks different. And the colonel just sets her straight. And he's like, oh, I guess I wasn't clear. I was the commander. I was the person in charge, and she just has to eat her words. And it's like that moment when you look at the DA's face and she's just like, oh, crap. Like, this is not going well for us. And you're just like, yes, go Foggy. You're awesome. It's just one of those moments where I just think it helps build him up as more than just the conscience to Daredevil, the funny sidekick. Like, he is a legitimate, like, smart, awesome lawyer, his own man. He's not just riding the coattails. And I loved that scene. Like, I loved that.
Yeah, and I really liked that too. The one thing that I differ in what you said was when he was telling, so when they were talking about putting the Punisher up on the stand, and he was like, we need Matt to do this. He's better at this. It was really interesting because I was like, no, Foggy, you've got this. You've been doing awesome. And then Karen said that. And I was like, yeah. Oh, see? And then he turned to her and he said to her, but I really don't think he was saying it to her. I think he was saying it to me and everybody else who was watching it like me, saying, no, I am my own person. This is not going away, because I was afraid they were going to just write off all of that stuff that he had done and be like, nope, but Matt Murdock, he's the hero. And yeah, so he's
not,
like, no,
not only this that, is, when this he is, does question him, he screws up. He goes off of Foggy's plan and it backfires on him. Kind of.
Yeah, that's true.
So if Matt Murdock would have just stayed out of it, even though the only reason he was in it was because Murdock wanted it.
Well, Foggy wanted it. Yeah.
No. No, Murdock was the one that said, we should help the Punisher. We should help him. He's a human being. And then as soon as they agree and everyone's like, okay, we're the Punisher's lawyers, Elektra comes and says, hey, can I borrow you for like a week?
Well, and she's the one that screws it up. Like she goes and, you know, roughs up the medical examiner guy, and that kind of backfires. Yeah. So I find
it really interesting though, because in this season, what I saw a lot of was Matt Murdock versus Daredevil, and who is he? Is he Matt Murdock and putting on the Daredevil mask, or is he Daredevil and putting on a Matt Murdock mask? And it seemed a lot.
I agree with that 100%.
Yeah, it seemed a lot of him figuring out who he was, and I feel like, you know, because so when he screwed up the cross examination, he wasn't cross examining, he wasn't pimping the Punisher, so to say. He was out there explaining why the city needed Daredevil and saying, this is why I'm important. I am a hero, basically, but using the Punisher as an example, because he knew there were fans of the vigilantes out there. Because if you noticed, as he was saying something about how this city needs heroes, he turns and he looks right at Foggy. And that was something, that was an episode that I watched in the descriptive audio mode, essentially blind mode.
Daredevil style.
And it specifically said in there that Matt turned and looked at Foggy and then said this. So it really made it, really pointed it out to me that was Matt saying, no, this is, I'm going to talk about vigilantes, even though you figured out this awesome case. I'm going to talk about vigilantes because I'm a vigilante and this is who I am. Do you guys think he figured out who he was by the end of the season?
You think Punisher figured out who Daredevil was, or Matt Murdock?
Not Daredevil's. Although there is a time where I'm like, there's no way he doesn't know because of the long conversation on the roof.
Oh, I'm convinced the second they woke him up in the hospital.
So I don't know. At that point, I was like, well, he's got to know, but I don't think he figured it out. But when Matt Murdock was cross-examining him and he said, can I call you Frank? He looked up at him and I swear he was like, wait, I know you. So
you half expect him to say, is that you, Red?
Yeah.
Yeah. See, and I didn't pick up on that. So I like that. Yeah, I didn't even pick up on that.
I think that he changed his character, because when he was doing that hero speech, he also took his cane and folded it up, turns around, throws it. It lands on the table and he's being blind Matt Murdock, it's like, okay. And nobody asks him about this. So
that's interesting.
Yeah. Do you think he made a decision on which persona is really him?
Well, and I think that's, I don't think that he actually reached it because of everything that happens with... Okay, so maybe he did, though. Because, I mean, the whole Elektra, like, that just leads into everything that happens with Elektra. Because, you know, Elektra comes into his life, and then we have all these flashbacks of them being, you know, in love and, you know, understanding each other, and then she crosses the line. She takes him to, you know, the man who killed his father and basically says, you need to beat the crap out of this guy. We're going to tie him to a chair and we're going to, you know, punch him and then you're going to kill him. And, you know, at that moment, he's like, no, I'm not going to do that. And he realizes I can't be with this girl. But at the same time, he still loves her. And so he's trying to convince himself and convince her that he doesn't have to be a bad person to be, you know, Daredevil. He can still be a hero. He doesn't have to be the Punisher to be able to get, you know. And so, you know, Punisher telling him that, you know, you're not hardcore enough to you know, do what needs to be done. And then him having this struggle with Elektra at the same time where she's like, I know there's a devil in you. You need to release him. And he's like, no, I really don't want that to happen. Right. Like it just ties in so well with continuing to the next half of the, you know, the story. And by the end, he's still struggling with that. Like he's still struggling, but he's decided that he's going to save Elektra. He's going to try to show her that there's good in her. So I think that during that time, he does. I think he does say, okay, I can be a hero. There's horrible things in me, but, you know, because I'm trying to save Elektra, I think that that's really what, you know, turned it for me, at least, you know, in that question is that, you know, in the end, he's doing everything in his power to try to stop Elektra from turning into a demon and or turning into the evil, you know, and giving in. And he even shows her and she accepts it. And I don't think that she would really accept it unless he had, because he wouldn't be able to convince her of that. So I would say, okay, yes.
I like that. I like that. So he figured out that balance between the two. What do you think, Jeff?
I agree. It's, yeah, not much more to add. It's, you have to find the middle ground regardless. And I think by the end of the season, he knows what to do. A part of the struggle of choosing an identity is who knows how many of the identities, you know, the only people who knew he was Daredevil was Foggy, Stick, and a handful of people, and then Elektra. And so he had to keep all this stuff from Karen. So if he wants the Matt Murdock life, Karen has to know about the Daredevil life.
I like that a lot, actually. Yeah, because if you noticed, if Foggy had not have known about him being Daredevil, this season would have been completely different.
It would have been over after the first episode, because first episode ends with Punisher shooting Daredevil in the head. He was wearing his helmet, so it stopped it. But Foggy's the one who found him and got him out of there before the police could. So, you know, if your friends don't know some of your secrets, you're dead. You know, it's kind of like, imagine Batman without Alfred. You'd be screwed sometimes.
Yeah, and he also would have, like, not shown up and not helped out with the case. And, you know, Foggy was covering for him the whole time. And Karen's like, well, where the flip is he? You know, like, so, yeah, he was just a good friend, you know. And I think even by the end, he's second guessing whether or not he should do that. You know, Foggy is struggling with himself on whether or not it actually is a good idea that he goes out. And they have that big argument where he's like, dude, you don't have to go out and, you know, beat up people every night. You don't have to do that. And Matt's like, no, I do, you know, and they kind of have this falling out. And that's when, Nelson Murdock ends.
Starts.
Well, that's when it ends.
It's the beginning of the end.
Yeah. Like that's when it starts to end, you know, and, you know, but yeah, that's a really interesting little, you know, character development. I just think it just makes it so good. And I love that it wasn't just one linear story. You know, we talked about that a lot, and you know, we keep doing this going to say, oh well, you know, Foggy did this, and it just makes it so much better, like when you can intertwine stuff. And that's why having Daredevil be a series is so much better than having it be, you know, a movie, I think. Because
yeah, I mean, we haven't even gotten to we kind of mentioned the second part with the hand being part of it, but Elektra, she shows up and she's fighting the hand at the same time that this trial is going on, and he's trying to live both lives, and then the Punisher gets convicted, put away in prison, and gets thrown into prison and gets tangled up with the Kingpin, with Wilson Fisk.
And that was one of those moments that was just like, oh yes, you know, like
absolutely,
like,
no, didn't see it coming at all.
See, and I have to say one other thing, like, I didn't watch or like look at anything, and when Elektra showed up, that was like a crazy moment for me too. Like, I knew the Punisher was in it and I knew that Daredevil was in it, but I had either forgotten or just hadn't thought about. And so when she was sitting on that couch and he goes, Elektra, I was like, yes! It was kind of like another one of those Spock moments for me, just like, yeah, this is awesome! You know, like, so anyway, yeah, both of those moments were awesome moments for me.
You know, I mean, the Fisk one was, it's so funny because I was listening to it in blind mode on that part, and he turns around and it, and this bald man, this man lifting weights, and Castle walks up to him and he puts the weights down and he sits up and you see the back of a bald head. And I'm like, well, there's Fisk.
Yeah.
And then he turns to face him. It is Wilson Fisk.
That's awesome.
And it's like, well, of course. Yeah.
I see you got my message.
And I really liked how they did the backstory in the next episode, how they were like, okay, this is what Fisk has been doing.
Yeah, it just immediately goes into him getting in jail, how, you know, and I think it's awesome when the, like, the guy who's the main cheese in the prison comes to him and says, look, you are nobody. I'm the kingpin in this jail, you know, in this prison. I was like, oh, we have a title, you know, like, you know, he's like, well, okay. And I like how he goes about it. I love that it's, he knows that he's the outcast, and then the outcasts come to him and say, you know what? You got to keep your head down. We got to stick together. And he's like, all of a sudden, you know, you can see the wheels turning inside his head, and he's like, okay, this is what we need to do. And then, you know, his financial advisor comes to him, and he's like, okay, you have no money left. They've, you know, they've taken all of your assets. And he's like, this is what you need to do. You need to go and, you know, pay this woman's rent. Yeah. Fund my two friends that don't speak English, that are Latino and are outcasts here, you know.
And what then, is this? Untraceable, yeah. If you do it right.
Yeah. And the guy's like, you do realize that you're not going to have any more money left if you do this. And he's like, just get it done. You know, he just hangs up on him, and he's like,
Vincent D'Onofrio is perfect as the kingpin. I love that he's not all of us. He's not just, I'm in charge. He still has the, just listen to me. You know, or he's more in charge this season, but the first season of like, I don't want to be in public. I don't want to talk to people. He has social anxiety. Until you embarrass him in front of his girlfriend and he removes your head. Anyway, Vincent D'Onofrio is perfect as king.
Yeah, and I like that they showed that the kingpin is not just a fat man. Like, I was actually talking to Lena about this because in the comics, they specifically talk about how everyone thinks that he's fat, but he's actually just solid muscle. Like, he is like one of the strongest people in the world, just physically. And so him lifting these weights, and there's like 10 of them on each side, I was like, okay, good job on that. I like that, you know, because he is physically imposing, not just a big, you know, man, which I liked. I liked that. I mean, that was just a little nod to me in my brain.
We'll get to what he does in just a second, but there's a scene where he takes on the Punisher.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, the Punisher, he's killed tons of people, and you're like, this guy can handle himself. And Kingpin, he's there, and he's like, look, you're tough, but I'm tougher.
To be fair, when Kingpin fights Punisher just went through a lot. He just killed a couple dozen people in a prison cell. So had they both been fresh, maybe Punisher could have beat him. I kind of feel bad for John Bernthal, who played Punisher. He had to wear some sort of bruise prosthetic or some sort of beat up makeup through this whole thing. Like, he didn't get a chance. I don't think there was an episode with the Punisher where he didn't get punched in the face at some point. You know?
That's really funny.
I didn't even think of that.
Well, I was thinking about it when they were like in the scene in the cafe when his face is all bloodied up and that girl comes over and he's like, keep the black coffee coming, you know. I was like, man, why isn't anyone being like, are you okay? You have like no face. Like, you know, I was just waiting for her, you know, this like nice flow, you know, waitress named Flo that was to just be like, you know what? Maybe you shouldn't continue the Fight Club or something. Like, you know, like just say something to him. Like, she was totally just standoffish about it, which.
Or I'd hate to see the other guy, something like that. Just some sort of reference to how his face looks like.
He was all beat up.
That is funny. That is really funny.
Yeah. Yeah. So I found it.
Yeah. Anyway,
I found it really interesting the way that the Kingpin, and I would expect nothing else. So this is just great writing. The Kingpin was able to maneuver the Punisher into killing his enemies for him. Because here's the Punisher who is obviously going after people who are criminals, and he's not going to just do what a criminal tells him to do. Yeah. And yet the Kingpin figures out a way to be like, look, you get something out of this. I'm not saying I don't get something out of this. The rising tide lifts all boats.
Yeah.
He says that a couple times. He said that in the first season too. He's got that painted on his wall or something. Rising tide lifts all shit.
Motivational poster. So
next to it, the cat hanging on to the branch.
Well, and I like how it was just like, hey, this guy's crazy. I could probably use him. Like, he's just reading the newspaper, and even the, you know, the other villainous, you know, head of says, you're going to stop reading the paper in a little while. You're not going to care, because the only thing that's going to matter to you is what happens inside these walls. And you can see the kingpin, you know, Wilson, look at him and just be like, you fool, you know, like you are so one-sided. I, you know, and then he sees that there's this guy that he can utilize, and it just shows how brilliant he is as a,
you know. Well, and also I think I'm pretty sure. So in the scene, in the courtroom scene, when Matt Murdock overhears the officer tell Punisher, you know, remember what we talked about or something like that.
Remember what you really want, or something.
Remember what you really want. So I'm sure Kingpin sent a message to Punisher saying, hey, I have a lead on who killed your family. And so, but in order to talk to me, you have to come to prison. You have to be convicted. Because I think that the jury was pretty much on Punisher's side until, and I think Punisher knew that. I think Punisher's like, dang it, this guy just got me off, essentially. So I'm going to...
I think that he just knew that he was going to not get off, but he was going to get a less sentence, so he wasn't going to end up where Fisk wanted him to be.
Right.
Yeah,
okay,
there's no way Frank has a walk.
He killed 37 people. He's going to be locked up somewhere,
but not where Kingpin.
Yeah, not maximum security, like crazy, where all the worst of the worst go. Yeah.
Yep. So I think that's a very... I find that very interesting, that whole thing, because when Matt Murdock first overheard that, I was like, oh, crap, who's threatening him, and how can they even threaten him? Because, you know, it's not like he's got family or friends that he's trying to protect still. They're dead. That's why he's doing this.
Or even as viewers, who's the other villain? What other villain would be threatening him? It's Punisher, and Elektra wouldn't be doing this. Why would... And then segue into Kingpin.
See, I was expecting a much more nefarious plot from, Perez, the DA? Oh, yeah. I thought that maybe she had been doing something behind the scenes as I was watching it. But then fast forward, and I was like, oh, not her.
She was dirty enough through the whole thing. Like, just...
I think the Punisher story was awesome. I really liked how Kingpin was able to manipulate him.
And then the most bloody of bloody fight scenes in the prison corridor.
Okay, there was one thing that bugged me about that scene. If you are in prison and this guy just took out your boss, why did they take turns taking him on, essentially?
That's always the big joke of, oh, good thing they went one at a time, but... Would you want to mistakenly get stabbed by your buddy who isn't under all that control anyway? I don't know. It's one of those things you see in all sorts of fight shows and stuff. Too many people at once, you're not doing very much good. You know, you're just giving them a bigger target. I mean, I have zero fighting training, so maybe Nick can answer. Does attacking in a team help or worsen? Who knows?
Depends on how you're attacking. So if they're both in front of you, there's actually a technique when you're fighting that... If you're fighting more than one person, what you try to do is you try to line them up so that you're only fighting one person at a time. Okay, so when they're surrounded by everyone, okay, it doesn't make sense that one guy's going to step out and then the next guy steps out from behind him, unless they're trying to use misdirection where it's like, oh, he's fighting this, so I'm going to try to attack him from behind now, and oh, crap, he already beat that guy up, and now I'm stepping up and I'm going to get my butt kicked. So it all depends on how they're doing it. I understand the mentality that you don't want to get caught in the crossfire. But when you're in a corridor like that, there's not a lot of room to fight. Okay. And so if Frank Castle was doing it properly, and you really can't tell, like when you're looking down this corridor, but he would make it so he's only fighting one person at a time by maneuvering himself. So if somebody behind them is trying to run one way, he positions his body and uses the person in the middle as like a pivot point so that that person's just running circles around while he's running circles around to finish off that person. And he's skilled enough that he takes them out quickly enough that he can just move on to the next person to do that.
That's true. He didn't spend a whole lot of time on one single person. So
And that's what you want to do. Like, you literally want to not fight one person at a time, because once you get two or three people on you, it's a lot harder to do it. And usually the only thing you do if two or three people are attacking you at one time is that you break through, okay? You break through, and then you try to maneuver yourself so that you're only fighting one person again. And so if you find yourself in a situation where two people are attacking you at once, you try to position yourself into a way so you are only attacking one.
Okay. All right. I'll take that.
We'll take your word for it.
Yeah. Okay. So,
well, with that fight scene, how do you feel about the tease of the skull on his chest when the guy's bloody face just lands on his chest?
Well, that's just cool. That's just, you know, that's just cool.
It was a great shot. Him being dragged over the puddle and he looks at it. It's a great shot, but I don't know how believable.
Oh, no. It's definitely not believable. It's a comic book show, and you got to give the nerds something to be all excited about.
Yeah, but out of everything the Marvel Universe has given us so far, that's probably the closest thing to reality. A prison fight. I mean, even, you know, Daredevil has super hearing and whatnot. Jessica Jones is strong, and obviously the entire Marvel Cinematic Universe. That fight scene there is probably the most grounded thing there is.
And I had a hard time. I watched that fight scene, and I had a hard time watching it. Oh, yeah. So I think just because, you know, you had axes and you had all sorts of things.
That's another thing. I understand how people get a shiv or sharpen a stick. How did that guy get a polished hatchet?
Hey, you know what? They have to have a fire somewhere.
Somebody brought it to him in a cake.
Fisk has all the police officers in his pocket. Like, he admits that. And so all he has to do is ask a police officer to give him a weapon or something.
It was the first Kingpin, the guy who says, "I'm Kingpin," not Wilson Fisk. It was one of his guys. And I don't know.
He controls 80% of the contraband. So, you know, you can easily sneak stuff in, especially if you have that much power, you know, and you only use it in absolute necessity when you're in prison, because you're going to get in trouble if you.
Yeah. The first time you use it, it's gone.
So. Yeah.
So do either of you find it interesting that Punisher was only in prison for less than 24 hours?
I just think that was awesome. I was like, okay, yeah, I'm totally down with that. You know, and
of course,
Kingpin has all the power. I almost thought, like, when, you know, that police officer was like leading him through the prison, and then he ends up like, he points to him and says, "Go that way." I thought that he was just leading him out of prison. Like, that was my first initial thought when he went to come visit Fisk. I was like, just going to let him go. Yeah, they're just going to let him go, like, immediately. Like, that. Like, I thought that that cop was like, "Okay, I want you to kill somebody for me." And he was just letting him out. And then when Fisk was there, I was like, yeah, you know, like,
that's a much better ending.
That's even cooler. But yeah, yeah. Like, so I already kind of had that inkling in my head that he was just going to get out, you know, because of, you know, this cop or whatever. Like, I kind of already had that in my head. So it wasn't that amazing to me anyway.
Okay. All right. I just thought it was like really interesting that it was only, he showed up, he had his conference with Fisk, and then Fisk is like, "All right, go talk to this guy, kill him when you're done, because that's what you do and that's what I need." And
we haven't even mentioned that Fisk tricked him. He says, "Go kill him, we'll let you out, then we'll be good." And he locks him in there and goes, "Sorry, my bad." You know,
see, I think he wanted to see how good he actually was.
No, I think that's just what he tells himself afterwards. Like, "Oh crap, he survived. Okay, it was a test. Yeah, it was a test."
Yeah, I think that too. I believe that he really thought that he was going to die. Like, I think that he put him in a situation where he was going to kill him. And he took care of his enemies inside, and that's all he really needed. That's my impression of it. And then Punisher survives, and he's like, "Ah, crap."
See, I think that if you're Fisk, you say to yourself, "Okay, what are the chances on this?
Yeah, what are all the scenarios that'll happen?
There's a 90% chance that he's going to die, and if he dies, he takes out the rival leader of the gang in there, and probably some of the gang members. That's a win for me. If he kills everybody, if he's as good as everyone says he is, if he kills everybody, there goes the rival gang. That's good for me." So I think that he at least planned for it and had the, "Well, I figured I would be a test" thing ready before he actually survived. But you're right, I don't think he expected him to survive. I think he thought that he was done for.
Well, and that also brings up the question, because the Punisher's main villain, main like villain in the comics is the Kingpin. If that sets up the entire precedence for the Punisher series that we're going to get, where he's like, dude, you tried to kill me, so now I'm going to do basically what I did to, you know, before, you know, I'm getting vengeance on you because you, you know, pissed me off. So that could be a, you know,
that would make a lot of sense because the Punisher, he's the kind of guy who just gets stuff done. He doesn't spend a lot of time killing somebody. So who's going to be the bad guy for an entire season for the Punisher?
Yeah.
Well, it's got to be somebody who's as capable as Wilson Fisk.
Yeah, and I'm sure that they'll bring in some other, you know, people. I wonder if they bring Blade in or something, like, you know. I mean, they could do all sorts of stuff because Punisher and Blade have a whole bunch of stuff that goes on with them. But that would be kind of weird, out of the realm of it. But
yeah, all of a sudden introduce vampires. Why not? Who owns the rights to Blade? Is that someone we don't know? Or
I
don't know, because there were the Wesley Snipes movies. So, but those have been a while back. So the rights have probably fallen back to Marvel. I know Marvel made cartoons.
But that had
Blade in them.
I think so.
I don't know. I think
I don't follow it that closely.
Well, I follow it because I have friends that are just going, now, how come Wolverine wasn't in Captain America? It's like, oh, because legally he can't be. Like, I have, you know, just the other day, someone told me, I think Star-Lord's dad is Dr. Manhattan. And I you're not supposed to.
That's funny.
Oh, that's too funny.
Dr. Manhattan.
Okay. So we've talked a lot about Punisher, and he's escaped now.
Let's talk about Elektra.
Yeah,
she really adds so much to this series, and I love how they brought her in. And we talked about how she kind of was brought in, and the struggle. But I am very intrigued. I am very intrigued by Stick. Is that his name?
Yeah, the mentor.
Stick. I don't know why I always doubt that. I always doubt that his name is Stick.
Sounds wrong calling a blind guy Stick.
I guess. But I am really intrigued to know more about his backstory. And I hope we get more of that. But we do get a little bit of it. I mean, we get that, you know, he trained Elektra from a very young age. And then when Elektra kind of leaves him, that's when, you know, he teaches Daredevil and he teaches Matt, you know, the ways of the ninja. But he's so crazy because he's like the not wise Asian man that's not Asian, you know, like from all the Kung Fu movies. He's supposed to be the, you know, wise old man that just knows everything, and he is the one that fixes everything in the end with the young buck that's going out, and, you know, it's the age old Kung Fu movie. And yet he's not that in any way, shape, or form. And so it's so interesting to me. But
what I find interesting was when he was explaining the hand to Daredevil, that he said that the hand came in essentially and destroyed his village. And he saw, you know, everybody in his village but him essentially when he was a child. And so his life's mission has basically been to fight the hand. And it's like, okay, so what village in America were you living in?
Because, yeah, how old
are
England,
you? Or, yeah. And that's another thing is like, okay, so the hand has the secret of immortality. The Stick?
That was what I was just thinking. Yeah, maybe he, And he ends up, yeah, and the other thing that just kind of flips me out too is that he's got to have some sort of like augmented blind powers too, you know?
Oh yeah, he definitely does, because in the first season it kind of references them a little bit. He was saying that he basically knows what Matt's going through because he has that same issue.
But yet he's also depending on Matt.
Use those ears of yours. Is her heart beating?
Yeah, to do that. But then he also reveals, oh yeah, you know, you're following this, you know, follow their breath instead, you know, don't follow their heartbeat and don't follow their swords, because they know that that's how you're doing it now. They have to breathe, you know, eventually. So follow their breath. How does he know that?
Yeah.
Of course, it's because, you know, for some reason he also can do it. And he also walks around all the time without, you know, his cane. So,
well, there was a scene where he was driving.
No, he was never driving.
Wasn't he driving?
No, he always had a driver. There was always a guy.
That was okay. So there's a downside of the blind mode right there.
There you go.
didn't explain that it said they got into a sedan. And I'm like, really?
So after Elektra gets shot or something, stabbed, I forget, injured pretty bad, Stick shows up and saves. And there was a driver. Stick had these two guys with him that were never named, but they were just like, oh yeah, we work for Stick. And
yeah, his cronies, I don't know.
Okay, so just before Stick, there was a scene that really summed up Daredevil and Elektra's relationship to me. It was when they first found that big giant pit. And
yeah,
I was
part
like,
creeped me out, man.
Oh, yeah, that was
watching that. I had to like not watch it. I had to turn away.
Really?
It was also so great of them to do that over the end and beginning of an episode.
Yes.
Like, here, give me your flashlight. He throws it in. Okay, let me know when it hits the bottom. Cut to credit.
and I loved that because, so for two things. First off, it really showed their relationship because they kicked butt to get in there. And then it's like, oh, there's a pit there. And
why is the
flashlight
digging a pit? Like, they say that. And I'm like, yeah, why are they digging a pit? What the heck?
Yeah. And so she then throw the flashlight in there. And it really just shows that, you know, okay, she realizes there are some things that only he can do. Like, hear it when it hits the ground. Did that hit the ground? Nope. All right, well, then just tell me when it does. And dip to black. So that was, I think that summed up their relationship right there perfectly. Like,
well, and enter the night nurse, you know, whole scene with her. And, you know, that just developed her character more and more, setting up for probably Luke Cage or Iron Fist, or, you know, keeping her as the, you know, factor that everyone kind of knows, because she popped up in Jessica Jones too. And I, you know, they just developed her character even more.
Yeah.
So
even reference saying, I'm in the doghouse because I let some guy who puts our friend.
Yeah.
Who's so much stronger.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I liked that. But yeah, she was great. And, you know, she's trying to save them and then they turn into zombies and it's just like, whoa, this took a whole different turn, you know, and that's why I was like, first half, second half, you know, like all of a sudden it's just like this story about, you know, draining people's blood and putting toxins in there and them, you know, freaking out. And it's like, well, what's going on here? This is all mystical and stuff. This is weird. So, yeah. And it kind of took a total 180 for me. So I thought that was really kind of fun. It was very comic book-esque too, because they do that a lot of, they'll do that a lot in the comics where it's like, oh yeah, you know, I think I know where this story's going. And then all of a sudden just something out of the blue happens. So I thought that was very good.
Well, I also thought that, okay, now it's truly is a comic book show because they have a way for people not to die.
Yeah.
Arrow's got the Lazarus pit in it. Now Daredevil has the hand's secret method. So nobody has to die ever.
Yeah, that was cool. You know, and then you always kind of had that in the back of your head, like what's going to go on, what's happening. And then they continued on with the, you know, black sky. What is this ultimate weapon that is going to happen? And, you know, Stick just always talks about it. He's just like, what is this? You know, yeah, we just need to stop the war before it happens. I'm going to be as vague as possible about it all the time. You know, I'm not going to tell you anything. Let's just stop it. And
no one's ever had to use, or they've never been able to use it.
Yeah. And, you know, and I love the reveal. I love the reveal because you're like, dude, come on, just help him out. You know, like, what's your deal? And then when it's revealed, you're like, oh, yeah. It makes a little more sense why you were doing that now. You know, just, yeah, it was
I find it interesting because Stick does not seem to be the kind of guy who would have a second thought about that. Like, well, this is what has to happen. I mean, Daredevil calls him out on it. It's like, of course you're the hero of this story because that means you get to kill on your terms when you think it's appropriate, and which Daredevil makes you think is like all the time.
Sure.
So I found that interesting.
But at the same time, like, you know, you think that Stick is just the type of guy that would just kill whomever, you know, and just do what is supposed to happen. But then it's revealed that he doesn't do that. And maybe that's why he's become that way even more now, is because he knew that, you know, that Elektra was the, you know, black sky, and that she was, you know, prophesied to basically be the leader of the hand and, you know, bring upon, you know, death and destruction on everyone. And he fell in love with this little girl, and he didn't want her to have to just be killed, you know, because he had a soft spot for her. And so he did everything in his power to try to stop her from becoming this, you know, devastating, horrible thing, you know. but he, you know, deep down inside, he knew, you know, that it was going to happen, and he was just hoping beyond hope that it wouldn't, you know. And it made you kind of have a soft spot for him even more, because, you know, first season of Daredevil, you're just like, this guy is a jerk. Like, why in the freak is he around? Like, he's just a jerk all the time. And then he shows up again and you're like, get this jerk out of here. Like, I don't want, you know, he's just a jerk. Cut it out. But, you know, he's got to be there. And so it, you know, humanizes him a little bit by, you know, knowing this backstory.
Yeah. I find it really interesting that, you know, we talked about how this season seemed to be a lot of how Matt Murdock was finding out who he was and whether he was Daredevil or Matt Murdock. And I think it also goes in, there's a lot of who is Elektra? Is she a good person? Is she a bad person? Which one is she going to decide? Because, I mean, in the same episode where they're talking about how we want to make this work, I choose you, I'm going to be a better person. And then she goes in and slits that ninja's throat. And immediately kills somebody after saying that.
This is who I am.
This is who I am. Do you still want me? And it's like, weren't you just saying you were going to try to do better?
That's a good storyline. And then, you know, it just cuts into all of a sudden the Punisher is now, you know, and Karen's trying to figure out and try, she has a soft spot for the Punisher. And so she's trying to figure out more about his backstory. And, you know, she decides that she wants to go to the newspaper and, you know, she discovers that, you know, she has kind of a knack for this. And now that she's moving on from being the personal assistant to Foggy and Matt, she's got to figure out who she is with her life. And so it's just a story of like all of the characters really figuring out who they are, you know? And so she takes that same role and Foggy takes that same, you know, path. He's been with Matt the whole time. And then he finds out, you know what? I can be my own man. I'm going to go off on my own. I'm going to join this other, you know, firm. You know, they've even offered that I could be a partner at the firm. Like, they even talk about that, you know, that it's a possibility. And, you know, with his brilliance, every single character, even in the show, and even the night nurse, same thing. She's like, dude, I thought this hospital was about saving people. I'm going to go off and do my own thing. I quit. Like, this is a story of everyone finding out who they are and then, you know, taking who they are and becoming better because of it. It's an interesting thought.
I definitely like that.
You know,
The more we talk about it, the more I see it in more of the characters, people figuring out who they are. And what I really like is there was change from the beginning of the season to the end. They didn't just end up on the same, oh, we're these characters. They changed them and they changed. And I like where they went with them. It made it more interesting.
For sure. Yeah. And I did not see the reveal of who the blacksmith was coming at all.
Me neither.
Like, not one bit. Like, I was just like, that's going to be season 3. Like, that's what I thought it was. I thought it was just going to be like, or, you know, Punisher season 1. But I'm really glad that they wrapped that up, you know, that they didn't leave it hanging, that they gave some closure, and that now the Punisher is who he is. And, you know, he's the hero that, you know, we know he is. He just does bad things. And there wasn't any question about it. So,
yeah. Well, see, here's the thing for that guy for me. He always plays a military guy. Like, I swear he's always in the military whenever I've seen him. But he's always a military guy who's got something shady and twisted. Like, every time he's in The Flash as the general who's trying to get Gorilla Grodd. And yeah, it's a.
He was Lex Luthor. He's Mr. Krabs. Always nefarious.
He does a good job at it, and he has the look. Like, he really just looks like a jerk.
He looks like
general, you know, like
he looks like someone of authority, you know. You and his voice is, you're going to listen. He has that commanding presence.
I mean he's great like that. He could, if he weren't an actor, he could be a politician and people would have voted for him, I'm sure. So
is anyone else really impressed with the Punisher's ability to spray paint an artist's skull? I don't know. I was like, dude, he's a brilliant marksman and an awesome painter. That's awesome.
To be fair, we only ever see it from a distance. We don't know how good it was. We don't really see it too close. But
I don't know. There's the part where there's that big explosion behind it, and it's kind of the first time it kind of shows. on his chest, and it's pretty clear there.
I think I was a little more annoyed that the vest he was painting it on already had the outline of a skull, pretty much. He just had to paint by numbers to make it the right color. But you know, I was going to be more upset if by the end of it we didn't see him with a skull on his chest. That would have been more upsetting than any attempt at a skull. If it was just like, no, we're not even going to do it. Well, then screw you. Why'd you even call him the Punisher? You know, yeah. It's like making Daredevil but not giving him the horns. You know, it's...
Well, I think that it actually is what a lot of people talked about after the first season, because he didn't get his suit till the last episode. He was just wearing the dry fit t-shirt and the, you know, I want to say that it's actually like a Nike Pro Combat is the official brand that they used, with the black shirt with the red piping and, you know, basically high-end fancy sweats and then a headband. And people were like, wow, this is cool, but where's his costume? I want his costume. And then they break out the costume at the end. So I think they did the same thing there with the Punisher, because this was very much a Punisher origin story too.
Yeah.
Do you think when his series comes out that they're going to have to reestablish some sort of origin? Do you think they're going to try again and be like,
no,
hey, by the way, this is what happened?
I don't think that they'll need to at all, because I think that it's going to be the same thing. Like, they're not going to have to do that for Black Panther now.
Or even Luke Cage.
They haven't had to do it for Batman, and they've done it for every Batman movie. So,
but this is Marvel.
I know, but I'm using them as the general.
Okay, look at Spider-Man. So Spider-Man, and I'm not going to spoil anything aside from Spider-Man, but that was big news. So Spider-Man is in Civil War. They did not do an origin story.
No, they didn't.
And yet they introduced who the character was and let you know what kind of a person he was. And I think they could very much do the same thing with the Punisher. Is they don't have to give him an origin story, because that exists in this universe already. We'll give you a story. I think they're going to do something where he's going to be a big bad, but got a heart of gold too. Maybe have some flashbacks to him playing with his wife and kid.
Or even in the opening credits, or him explaining to someone, my family was murdered in front of me and I spent my life getting back at those people or something.
Yeah, and you know, I have to say,
bad guy say, better, why are you doing this?
He better get his battle van. He better have it, because that'll be awesome. Yeah, but it wasn't the battle van. He's got to have... You know what needs to happen? Tony Stark needs to go to him and say, hey, look, I like what you're doing. Here is Jarvis, you know, 2.0 for the battle van, so he can have somebody to talk to in his battle van. Because Tony Stark is the one that gives everyone everything in the Marvel universe. Oh, here, have this. Oh, here, have this. Like, he's responsible for everyone. So let's just continue.
When you can afford it.
Let's just continue that. Like, he's just going to be like, you know what? I have all this surplus weapons in the back here that I don't want anymore. No, here's the battle van.
Stark and he wouldn't get along. He's going to go steal it from Stark.
Yeah, I'm okay with that more. Because you really think, hey, guy who's killed 37 people because he felt like it, here's a whole bunch of better weapons.
Hey, you never know. Tony is flipping out a lot, right?
Tony's having issues.
One of the things.
Before we get into any Civil War spoilers on accident.
I want to so bad. Anyway.
We can do that next week.
Okay. So is there anything else that you guys want to talk about with Daredevil, the Punisher, Elektra, the Hand, anything like that?
No.
I have something that's kind of not necessarily for the show, but in binge watching in general. Do you guys get a weird feeling when you see in the description for the next episode in the season finale? Do you get this thing in your head like, oh, maybe I shouldn't watch it right now. Maybe I should save this. Do you? Because this is something I re-binged to check again.
I do.
I don't ever pay attention that closely.
Oh. I actually try not to read the synopses that show up, because a lot of times they are very spoiler-esque.
So. But I don't know, just the idea of like, oh, this is the end of it. The last one, I know I'm continuing watching. I don't know. For me, it was last night, right before bed, just like, oh, this is the last episode. Do I want to watch it tomorrow?
Yeah.
I don't know. It was just something.
Okay. Hey, so I'm going to ask you guys both a question then that is just kind of off the top of your head. Where do you guys think Punisher is going to go? Season 3 Punisher. It's going to happen.
Or Daredevil.
Where do you guys think he's going to happen? Or sorry. Wow. It's late. Let's do this question and then wrap it up.
Sure.
Okay. So I'm going to ask you guys a question then. In Daredevil Season 3, where do you think it's going to go? where do you think they're going to put Matt Murdock and Foggy Nelson?
So I think that it's going to be all about the Hand. I mean, it's got to be. And if they do it in a trilogy, yeah, I am okay with them just going forever with, you know, it. But we all know that the actors and blah, 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 and stuff like that, they don't always want to play the same character for 20 years, unless you're Sean Connery. But then, so I think that we're going to have some sort of closure. I think it is going to get much more mystified. And I think that they're going to tie that in with, you know, Iron Fist and stuff like that. And so they can kind of go to that magic realm. And I wouldn't be surprised if they even have a little bit of Doctor Strange, because they're already, you know, establishing that. But the thing is that Fisk is still there. And so Fisk has got to be, you know, tied in somehow. And so either it's going to be like a turf war between Fisk, he's going to get out of jail, and the Hand, and then Daredevil's just caught in the middle, and Elektra, he's trying to save Elektra because now she's a possessed demon that's trying to kill everyone, because that happens all the time, you know? And so I would not be surprised if it's something along those lines where, you know, it's a turf war, you know, and Fisk is actually trying to save the city, you know, because that's his MO, right? Like, this is my city and I'm doing what's best for it.
So there's even the possibility of Daredevil and Fisk working together to stop the Hand.
Yeah, perhaps? That there could be a little bit of that. And then, you know, in the end, his inevitable betrayal, you know,
because your sudden but inevitable betrayal.
So, yeah, that's what I would say. How that comes along or how that happens, it's going to be a fun ride, you know, so that's what I would say. And then, you know, Punisher will probably pop up here or there. Or, you know, maybe they'll have, I don't know, they haven't really been doing a lot of cameos in the Netflix series, so I don't think that they'll do that. But I think it probably will lead into Defenders.
Okay.
You know,
I agree with that.
At the end of the season, you know, everything is just going to crap, and that's why everybody has to come and help.
Okay, Jeff, how about you?
I like Nick's angle of the gang war and the turf war and all that. I want to see Jessica Jones actually meet. I want her to have a cameo, not just a reference, not just naming her in the season. I would like to see them meet, maybe throw Luke Cage. I don't know. A part of me is upset that there wasn't some sort of cameo, but you know, they got to start getting together somehow. I don't want them to meet all at once in Defenders. I want them to have some sort of established meeting, maybe introduce Iron Fist, give him his own series. And that it's the Defender series is Daredevil and Iron Fist meeting Jessica Jones and Luke Cage for the first time. Who knows? Yeah. More cameos. That's what I want. More superheroes. Okay. Give them to me.
So I like what you're saying. I'm going to say though that, Charlie Cox, I'm going to preface this by saying Charlie Cox has no idea whether or not there's going to be a season 3. I think you have to be pretty dumb to not know that there's going to be a season 3. So
well, I think with him, it's one of those things. It's like, I have not seen the contract, but I know they're writing the contract. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. So, so think about this though. The Defenders actually started the production, this week.
Oh, really?
Oh, they did?
Yes. So, let's see. So,
are Luke Cage and Iron Fist already done, or?
Yeah, I thought Luke Cage was already done. That's why they have the trailer for it right after Daredevil.
There's that.
So, yeah. Well, I mean, think about this though. So they may be replacing season 3 of Daredevil with Defenders. I'm gonna expand on both of your ideas right there. Is that so? Maybe Daredevil season 3 is the Defenders, because I see Daredevil kind of like the Tony Stark of the, an Iron Man of the MCU Netflix universe. And so he's the one who's kind of tying them all together, because he's the one who introduced the night nurse and all that stuff. I think it'd be really cool to see, you know, this gang war or something like that. I think that Elektra could go and destroy the Hand from within, or maybe they have to regroup for so long. I have no idea. I think the Hand's going to be taken out of the picture somehow. And I think if they do a season 3, the person that I think they are going to have be the bad guy is Bullseye.
That because makes sense.
Because in the comics, Bullseye kills both and...
Then they can have I've heard about a scene where Daredevil plays Russian roulette with Bullseye against his will. I've heard it, and that'd be interesting to see.
It'll be interesting. I want to see Bullseye. I think that they have done a good job by and proven to me that they can do casting, because I just think of the Daredevil movie that came out years back.
You think Colin Farrell's going to
reprise his role?
I hope not. So, but I think they could do a Bullseye and make it really interesting.
I think what they should do is have Bullseye come in and then have him and Hawkeye have a golf tournament.
All right. So anything else to add before we wrap this show up?
I was just thinking that wasn't Doctor Strange like originally in the Defenders, and then like Hulk and Namor, or, you know, Submariner, whatever. Weren't they like the original Defenders?
I think so. I want to say they were. I know Hulk was a Defender back in the day. So
it wouldn't surprise me if there's something in Doctor Strange. Because I think that their like hideout was even in his mansion, like, and stuff. I'm just thinking, because I know that my dad had a few Defender comics, and I remember reading them, and I didn't ever remember Daredevil and Jessica Jones and stuff, and so it's always been kind of like a little off to me. But I was like, okay, well, they're probably just the new Defenders. But, you know, when I was talking about it before, I was like, wait, yeah, there should be a little bit of Doctor Strange in there, and so it would make sense that the hand and all, you know, that blah blah blah. Anyway, it's just another thought. Anyway,
Cool. So, something else to look forward to. I really want this Netflix Cinematic Universe to cross more with the Marvel Cinematic Universe. I want cameos both directions, and not just from like Nick Fury.
I read somewhere that Charlie Cox was disappointed they didn't ask him to be in Civil War.
I would be.
Well, apparently, in his contract, it says that if Marvel at any time asks him to be in a movie, he has to say yes once.
Oh.
Yes, just one time, or just once?
He's under contract to do one Marvel movie.
Oh. So maybe they didn't want to waste it on this one?
Well, if Marvel comes to you and says, hey, you know how we only wanted you in one movie? Here's another paycheck. How do you feel about doing two?
Yeah, but at the same time, does Marvel want to take that chance? That he would be like, you know what, I'm done playing Daredevil. And then they have to bring in another person if they have a plan to put him in Infinity War.
Then you just kill him off.
Yeah, you could do that.
Give him the old Quicksilver.
Heck, you could even kill him off and be like, man, it really sucks that since the last time we were here, Daredevil fell off the top of a building and he's dead now. We could really use him right now.
We didn't even talk about how awesome it was that he got his Billy Club. I was so excited when he got his Billy Club. I was just like, yes, this is the next thing that I've been waiting for. It was total fan service.
Says the martial artist.
It was just awesome. And then he used him as nunchucks. And then he swung around like Spider-Man, but he wasn't as graceful as Spider-Man, which I loved. He was like, ah, like kind of like, this is awkward. And then he just kind of stumbled and kept going. But yeah, that was cool. I like that. Anyway, that's what we'll end on, because that was awesome.
All right. So if you have made it this far, thank you for listening to the Fandom Podcast. You are definitely a true fan. Yeah, this one has been a long one, but it's been a good one. We've talked about a lot of good stuff. If you have any thoughts or opinions or disputes with us on what we've said about Daredevil or any of our other news or stories that we've talked about, send us a message. Head over to fandompodcast.com/contact. You can send us a message there. You can click on the link to our social media, however you want to send us that message. If you want to support us, head over to fandompodcast.com/support. We've got some lists of ways that you guys can support us over there. And until next time,
I gotta say, sometimes I think you just might be the devil.
One batch, two batch, penny and dime.
May the fandom be with you. Okay, I'll let you be weird.
Don't let him be weird. Don't give him that permission.
See if they do the same
did
thing with
Wedge.
Did you
just give away
the
answer?
That's what I didn't want to say it, but I think you did.
I did. I'm going to cut that whole part out. This is going to be an interesting...
You know what you should do? Put that at the end without the answer. Oh my gosh. Did you just give away the answer to Boy Wonder Trivia?
Yes. Yes, I did. Ha ha ha.